knows what's coming. It's the first Sunday of the night. It's I'm going to turn the proceedings over to Ken McDermott Rowe and Gus Cantavera, who are in a, I hate to say this, but I think they're in a bunker at an undisclosed location, and they're going to take telephone calls tonight.
We're broadcasting from our command center, actually, Dave.
Good evening. This is In Context of WP Ken's live call-in show.
Hey, everybody.
I'm Ken McDermott Rowe, and I'm here with Gus Cantavero. Taking your calls, and we'll give out the phone number in just 1 minute. We'd like to talk about the war in Libya this evening and the crisis with the Japanese nuclear reactor. And please feel free to call and give us your thoughts on either of those issues tonight. Regardless of what we're talking about at the moment, don't worry if we're moved on or moved from one step to another. If you have something to say on Japan or on Libya, please give us a call. Before we get into that, Gus and I have been working on some videos that we
yep.
posted on YouTube. Could you talk about those, Gus?
Yeah, we did our first video about a month ago or so on public banking, and that was on based on the show we did with Tanya Harder-Pierce. I'm sorry, the new video we did is on Tanya Harder-Pierce. The one we did before was from about the public banking institute
with Ellen Brown.
The chairman
of the Institute for Public Banking.
That's right, and actually got a very good response from that one. They actually took it to the Capitol in California and showed it in their pitches to try to bring public bank to California. And so that was a real honor to have the work recognized like that. And so we followed that up and tried to make improvements to the production, and you know we'll continue to make more improvements. But the new video is on our interview with Tanya Harder-Pierce and her book Outsmart Your Cancer, and we're just trying to create some quick reference videos to be able to cover all the basic topics to educate anybody who does not know about the topic and just kind of show how complex many of the issues are and simplify them so that anybody can understand.
And where can people see the videos?
Well, we've got the link posted on the blog at incontextreport.com, and they are also on YouTube. And they look for the channel In Context TV, you should be able to find those videos. And you can just search for the title In Context TV, and there's public banking, and the second video is Outsmart Your Cancer.
And they run about 10 minutes?
Yeah, the first one we did was about 7.5 minutes, and the second one is 10 minutes, and the third one will be on this Wednesday's show, The Tuition Crisis. And that will be with our guest, Andrew Hacker.
Right, this Wednesday at 6:30 p.m. So please check them out and tell us what you think.
Yeah.
Drop us a note through incontextreport.com.
Leave some comments, positive or negative. Open to all.
So tonight we're going to talk about the war in Libya and the crisis in Japan, and our call-in number is 203-336-9756. That's 203-336-9756. If you want to talk to Gus or to me about either of those important issues. Now, the Libyan war first, it started following the UN resolution, and 1973 was the resolution number of March 17th. And it seemed like when that resolution was passed, authorizing the so-called no-fly zone, and U.S. and with NATO allies came in with all this aerial bombardment, almost immediately Gaddafi asked for a ceasefire. And
yeah.
It seemed like a matter of days before he was going to be toppled from power in Tripoli. But then a couple days ago, the tide seems to have turned, and the rebels were asking for the ceasefire.
Yeah, how odd of a situation is that, though? I would think even the most casual observer would be able to look at the scenario and say, it's a humanitarian intervention, right?
Right, that was a theory.
It's not a war. It's a, what they call it, a kinetic military action.
Kinetic.
Kinetic.
I said it. You know. Not Connecticut, but kinetic.
Kinetic. Whatever that actually means in the globalist newspeak, I don't know. But clearly it's just a play with words to try to get people's attention off of war, you know, because we've already got a war going on in Afghanistan. We've got another war going on in Iraq. They're both 10 years old now. Can we handle any more war? But if we just call it something else, I guess it's not that bad.
Well, they're really talking out of both sides of their mouth.
They are.
I mean, our government is Mrs. Clinton and President Barack Obama. Because on one hand, it's humanitarian war. It's not about supposed regime change. That's the euphemism for overthrowing a foreign government. But in fact, the bombardment and whatnot, it seems pretty clear that's what they want to bring about.
It was just... Well, what they sold it as was supposed to stop the – it was supposed to be a humanitarian intervention to prevent civilians from being massacred, right?
Right.
And so as soon as we start rattling the cage and saying that we're going to be we're going to bomb you or impose a no-fly zone, Gaddafi calls for a ceasefire. And that's not good enough? I mean, wasn't the point to stop the fighting?
It's pretty transparent to me that what they want to do is overthrow Gaddafi. And he is pretty unpopular. Evidently, this man has no friends.
He's been in power.
You
know what, though? Be careful of what you say, because he has been in power for 43 years, and his welcome is worn out. But he has been... actually pretty good friends with Sarkozy of France in the recent past.
Is that right?
Because they gave a significant amount of money to Sarkozy's reelection campaign. Mm-hmm. And the one of the ministers in Gaddafi's cabinet said, that wasn't one of the articles that I printed out here, but he said, we want our money back.
Yeah, I can imagine. If I were Gaddafi, I'd put stop payment on that shit.
But the in researching the... this whole intervention, I mean, I am just shocked with how transparent this entire episode is, because you just dig surface deep and you can see that the Libyan rebels, the very first thing that they did you see this? They created a central bank.
Yes. And an oil company.
And an oil company
said that they can. There's tremendous amounts of oil in containers and the ports that they captured.
And they said they were going to resume shipments within days. And
that's right.
This article here is from the New American. It's by Alex Newman. And it was Wednesday, March 30th, so only mere days ago. And I just highlighted a couple sentences here, and it says, one angle that has received attention in recent days is the rebels.
We have a call.
Oh, we do?
Go ahead there, caller. You're on In Context.
Hey, Larry.
Good evening, Larry. You're speaking to Ken and Gus. You're on the air at WPKN. Go ahead, Larry.
Dave, do you have that patch through? You do? All right, going once, going twice?
You try back, Larry, if you can.
All right, yep.
Hello, Larry.
Larry? No, Dave, I can't hear him.
He's not coming through.
I can hear some noise, but
coming through in our.
Well, let me. While you work on that, let me continue this quote. The rebels' seemingly odd decision to establish a new central bank to replace dictator Muammar Gaddafi's state-owned monetary authority. And interestingly, this reminds me of the public banking topic that we covered recently, because the. They have a publicly owned bank there, and unlike the it says here, unlike the U.S. Federal Reserve, which is owned by private shareholders, was among the few central banks in the world that was entirely state-owned. That's Gaddafi's central bank. At the moment, it is unclear exactly who owns the rebel central bank or how it will be governed. So, one of the very first things, you know, you have outside Western influence push for a revolution, and. Around the world, central banking. That's the one thing they want. They want one world central banking, all owned by private cartels.
That's right. And the countries that are resisting this, like China, seem to be better off. And Japan, too, there's a very strong public component of their banking system. The post office has the biggest bank in Japan, and that's one of the things that's allowed them, evidently, to sustain their deficits. But regarding the Libyan war, what is the likelihood that U.S. ground troops are going to have to be introduced there in order to unseat Gaddafi?
That's
because it looks right now, like rebels aren't doing that well. In fact, General Carter Ham, who was the head of our fighting, the U.S. troops there, said without continued aid, any gains by the rebels could easily be reversed. So they're under no illusion. These guys can't win the war.
That's the secret dirty word, though, ground troops, because we just see that 2,200 Marines from Camp Lejeune have been sent to Libya.
Yeah.
And Obama said clearly there will be no ground invasion. It's just going to be a no-fly zone, and that's, again, code word, because it's no-fly unless you're British and American forces carpet bombing.
Nice. So these troops are on the way.
They're on the way
to Libya. Yeah. And it's interesting, even though Obama appeared to be soft-pedaling our involvement before the UN vote.
Hey, Larry, are you with us now?
Yes, I am.
Hi, good evening, Larry.
Go right ahead.
What's your thought on the Libyan situation?
My thoughts were, I was just wondering how come prior to the conflict in Libya, as far as the American public was made aware of by the media, how come nobody knew anything about the problem as it was coming about? I mean, the media never was telling us anything as far as, oh, Muammar Gaddafi was doing this or was doing that. It just seemed like all of a sudden,
right,
there was a war.
Right.
And
right,
it just happened so quickly that it just seemed ridiculous.
Now, and that, and you raise a great point, because I've got just article after article here in my stack, and one of them is that the invasion was planned months in advance, and the British Special Forces were in Libya, 350 Special Forces already deep inside Libya, and that's the UK Daily Mail, March 25th, and it's got squadron of SAS, SBS troops have been in the country for a month, British Tornado aircraft have been prepared to
this
launch.
This is long before
bombing,
the UN resolution.
Oh,
right?
Oh, yeah, long before.
What do you think, Larry, about the possibility of introducing U.S. troops on the ground in Libya? Do you think that might happen, and how do you think Congress and the public would react?
But when did they go in there?
Well, I think they're not acknowledging now that we have anybody in there.
Wait,
although,
specifically who? When did who go in there?
When did America go in there? When did we plan on going in there? When did we start?
Well, I could tell
saying,
you that.
Hey, we have a problem there.
I could tell you that. I mean, going back to everything was supposedly nice up until, you know, just a matter of a couple months ago. It was unknown to Gaddafi that he was facing a possible invasion or conflict. Going back to the Egyptian Revolution, there was negotiations ahead of time saying we're going to go to Libya, and then after that we're going to attack Iran. Are you with us? And
Yeah. The
answer was no. And so they took him out, and then he had a stroke, and he's never been heard from again. So I could tell you it's been a while in the making. And, you know, it's,
well,
it's,
that's right. It's like
complex.
The Afghan invasion of Afghanistan. These things aren't pulled together overnight.
No, it's not. Sometimes you need a little bit of momentum to get going, but we're already over there. You know, I mean, it's to the point now where it's such a mess. You could just, you know, it's like looting after a storm. You know, at that point, the Middle East is just on fire, and it's just a total contradiction all over the place because, you know, I have an article from Press TV that says U.S. orders media silence over Bahrain, you know, because they're friendly with us. And Saudi Arabia, you know, it's like we're only going to support our allies and we're not going to cover the bad things that they do. I mean, just think of the standard we're setting here, because what happens if we have another like Kent State where a bunch of our cops shoot protesters? Does that mean Britain is going to come over here and impose a no-fly zone?
Well, I think that's really one of the things, Larry, that the Russians and the Chinese were very concerned about, is this precedent that we can just intervene in a civil war willy-nilly, just throwing up this claim of humanitarianism. Larry, do you think there's any coherence to our foreign policy? And when you look at what we're doing in Libya and then the way we reacted to the revolution in Egypt and to what's going on in other countries like Yemen and Bahrain, I mean, is there any logic to this, or does it seem like it just varies from country to country, according to what we think at the moment?
I don't think there's any logic to it at all. In fact, I'm very concerned about what they're putting forth to the American public as far as what we're doing in foreign policy, because we have this going on in Afghanistan, we have this going on in Iraq and Iran, and they just seem to give us what they want us to know, what they want us to believe, and this whole Libya thing just seems to be just another little piece of a recipe that they're trying to feed us that, oh, we're supposed to believe this and we're supposed to know this and nothing else really matters, and just go on with your lives, and this is what's important and this is what's not important.
Right.
And that just really upsets me, because all these things are going on in the world. I mean, look at Japan. I mean, this is a perfect example. All this nuclear problems going on, and we're talking about it on the media one day, and then the next day you never hear anything about
right.
it.
Right, it's just dropped like a hot rock, because now we're on
just
the next
dropped
thing.
Dropped it. You know, they don't want us to know about it, and so they stop talking about it.
Yeah, that's
it's like the media wants to program every single person in America. How
well,
many millions of people are here? I mean, come on.
When it, when it comes to
the... We're listening to the news, we're reading the paper, we're looking on the internet. So many people, we want to know this, we want to know that, and then they tell us what we want to hear.
How concerned are you, Larry, that the Japanese nuclear accident is going to affect the United States, or at least...
It's going to affect the entire planet.
Yeah.
Do you think the radiation is going to eventually spread far and wide?
It will to some degree, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, Larry, you're not supposed to think for yourself, okay? I'm going to tell you that right now. Two plus two equals five, and
yeah,
war
I know.
Equals peace.
That's what I'm sure.
We've never been at war with East Asia. No, we've always been at war with East Asia. We thank you very much for the phone call.
Thanks very much, Larry.
Yeah, no problem.
I like that tone of voice there. So why don't we move on to Japan, because you know that was mentioned there in the phone call. It seems like a good time to do that.
Yeah, in the wake of the earthquake and the tsunami on March the 11th of the last 3 weeks, has been a pretty wild ride for the Japanese. And it looks like, well, I don't know how forthcoming they've been, but the United Nations has gone there, and the news seems to get worse and worse, because I think the international inspectors were not entirely confident they were getting accurate information. But the latest from that I picked up from CNN, this is April 2nd, was that the highly radioactive water seems to be coming from one of the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plants from a cracked concrete a sump near number two reactor.
Uh-huh.
So this is a continuing leak, which probably, I imagine, explains the high readings they're getting out in the ocean now. They measured recently 4,385 times the expected amount of radiation in ocean waters off of the plant. So
right.
this was a significant increase from the previous day's reading. So it looks like this is moving, getting a steadily worsening situation.
Yeah, personally, I am not. Even though I have articles here that say that radiation has been detected in milk and grass clippings in Illinois, and also in rainwater in Massachusetts, the level is not to the point where I think we need to be personally concerned about our safety yet. At this
yes.
point, I am definitely an advocate of being prepared, but at this point, I'm not worried about radiation poisoning. But my heart goes out to the people living in the region, and I want to talk about it, because I'm sad for my fellow mankind, and they're being lied to, and they're not being taken care of. And I think that our military should be still in Japan helping with this catastrophe instead of fighting wars of aggression in the Middle East.
Well, Reuters reported on the 30th of March that radiation was measured at a village 40 kilometers from the plant that exceeded the criteria for evacuation. So
yeah.
This is getting to be a pretty large
zone. And initially,
so that's almost 30 miles.
Initially, what were they told, 16 kilometers?
Something,
it
was originally 20, and now they're finding unsafe conditions at 40.
40.
And boy, if it gets to Tokyo with the, whatever 10 million people or so that they have living there, that's going to be a real problem. Or so ago that the people of Tokyo were told not to give the local water to infants.
Yeah.
But I haven't heard too much about that. I don't. What did we assume that the situation stabilized? Is it gotten worse? I just haven't.
It
heard
hasn't
anymore.
Improved at all.
I don't see how it would improve. I would think that the effect is cumulative. And you know how much they say it's safe. And,
yeah,
and I'm certainly not worried right now here in the eastern part of the United States. But if you were living in Tokyo, how much is safe? And does anybody really know what the effects are going to be on your health?
No, I think the average person doesn't understand what the effects are and how to measure a safe level of radiation, especially because there's a mixture of particles. There's alpha, there's beta, there's gamma rays. There's different types of ways to ingest the radiation. I mean, I was reading a critique of Associated Press reporting on the situation and how the amount of radiation in the air was measured as 100 millisieverts, but that actually doesn't make any sense. You have to, millisieverts is a radiation that is dosed out over time. So you would have to say it's 100 millisieverts per time.
Oh, it's like kilowatts versus kilowatt hours.
Exactly. So you have to say millisieverts per hour or per day or per 24 hours or something like that. You can't just say 100 millisieverts.
By the way, listeners, you're listening to In Context with Gus Cantaviro and Ken McDermott-Rowe. And if you'd like to join the conversation regarding the war in Libya or the nuclear problem in Japan, please give us a call at 203-336-9756. That's 203-336-9756. So what do you have any sense of how unsafe it is to be in Japan now? I mean, are these people going to be looking at serious health problems down the line?
From everything that I've looked up, the people within the immediate vicinity, that 50-mile range, that's going to be a dead zone. It's going to be unlivable for 10 to 15 years.
Wow.
It's pretty severe.
And that the iodine, I understand, that decays the most quickly? Is that?
Yeah, but there's a lot of uranium there because they had those spent fuel rods on the floor above the reactor. And when the reactor blew up, it knocked all the uranium fuel rods sky high. So there was that big plume of smoke. Do you remember seeing that?
Yes.
There was 100,000 fuel rods that were blown into the air. And that's all radioactive uranium. It's way worse. The half-life of that is it's like 10 billion years.
And they have the same problem with storage.
I'm not laughing at it.
It's amazing that they have these containment areas for the actual reactor that's functioning. Yeah. But once the material is spent, they just stick it in a swimming pool on top of the...
They're violating every common sense rule. And what scared me most was that one of the future plants designed for Texas... was designed by this company who made the Fukushima plant that's caused so much trouble.
Hello, Dave. Do we have a call?
Another Larry.
Hi, Larry. Good evening. You're on the air at WPK.
Yes, I know. This is the second Larry here. It's the Larry Larry Show.
All right.
I wanted just to put out a couple of things. This is a wonderful radio station, by the way.
Thank you. We
appreciate
that. I live in New Hampshire, and I travel down to Connecticut all the time. And
okay.
When I can reach this radio station, it's a good day.
Thank you.
So, question about Libya.
Yeah.
I'm thinking that we might think differently about Libya if we were getting news reports that talked about Gaddafi continuing to slaughter his people. And I think, while I am not a person who supports our efforts in, certainly in Afghanistan, and I'm not a big fan of the Iraq situation, I think there is a time where sometimes you need to take a stand for folks who are seeking to liberate themselves from oppression.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
I think that Omar Gaddafi and certainly others, and I you mentioned earlier about the selectivity of some of the reports that are coming out of Bahrain and other things, and certainly the folks in Saudi Arabia live with a lot of oppression. But if we remind ourselves of our own history when we were seeking to liberate ourselves from the British Empire, we had the French come to our aid. And
sure,
they were really important to tipping the balance of power in our favor. And I just think that sometimes, as ill-advised and as disorganized, I think, as the Libyan attempt seems to be, and potentially expensive at a time where we have a lot of debt.
Well, let me...
I think there is something to be said to coming to the aid of people who seek a better life, even if our attempts to do so are imperfect.
Sure. Now let me propose this to you. Yes. First, the Libyan rebels have Al Qaeda in their ranks. Now, first, if I remember correctly, you know, we've been fighting this Al Qaeda boogeyman around, finding them all over the world for a while now, and they are the chief enemy out there. So we're supporting the rebels, who we actually don't even realize who they are. They may end up being worse than Gaddafi. They are religious extremists, and you know, to replace a thug with another thug is not an improvement. Secondly, during the financial crisis, we gave Libya $9 billion plus to bail them out because they were not doing well. And now, if that was a government that we wanted to fail so that the people would revolt and replace that government with a more successful, free, democratic republic, I think the only good thing that we could actually provide them is our constitution.
Yeah, but I understood. I think the I don't know that much about the involvement of Al Qaeda in Libya. It has been hinted about, yeah. and I think my reservation in swallowing that whole would be to say, you know, when I first heard about the whole thing about the people in Egypt rising against Mubarak and his repression there, the first thing that came to the media's attention was, well, there is the Islamic Brotherhood, and oh my God, if they get a hold of things over there, we are in real trouble. So I hesitate to buy into the idea that it's only Al Qaeda. I could be wrong, but well, I hesitate to buy into that.
Problem I have, Larry, and the humanitarian argument is a very appealing one. This is Ken speaking on one hand, but on the other hand, you got to know it's disingenuous because we're not intervening in the Ivory Coast, for example, now
yeah,
where there's huge slaughters and massive refugees.
But they have cocoa, and we interviewed
in Yugoslavia supposedly for humanitarian reasons, supported this Kosovo Liberation Army, and it turns out now that the guy who's heading Kosovo as the head of the Kosovo Liberation Army was murdering Serbs and selling their body parts. And
he's
a guy. So, on one hand, the humanitarian argument is appealing, and it should appeal to people. But on the other hand, I know the people who were running this country are just using it selectively for when they find it to their advantage.
And we,
I don't know where I come out on that.
We can't pick winners in these revolutions, you know. I mean, I can understand if they need a little assistance or something like that, but we can't just intervene and choose a winner because we're never going to choose someone who's an organic people, product of the people.
Yeah, I get you. I mean, I get it. I mean, I'm very torn about this.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not certainly, you know, carrying the flag, the stars and stripes and the victory with a blinder on. I mean, I guess I look at it and say, well, you know, I'd hate to be reading. And I mean, I advocate for people to, you're right about the mainstream media. They have the attention span of my young son and it pops around and that we forget things quickly. But I think if one takes the time to listen to shows, and also I want to recommend that Al Jazeera, it has an English version, which is really, really good.
Yes.
Right.
And,
and if you go online and you take a look at that, it gives you a very different perspective, as does the BBC, and I understand that most people don't have the time to do that. But it gives you context. But just want to call in, throw my two cents in, realize it's imperfect, but this is a great show and a great stick.
Thank you very much for calling, Larry.
Thank you, Larry.
Have a nice evening.
You too. I think that we all want to be optimistic. You know, we all want to believe the best in people, but you really have to temper your enthusiasm when it comes to dealing with this gang of criminal pirates who really, you know, because they sail up their Ironside ship with skeletons hanging off the side, and they say, you know, we are your last hope. You accept our help or you're going to be sunk, you know, and then you take their help, you go on, and they just end up raping and killing you.
It seems to be part of a coherent strategy to create a U.S. hegemony in the world, over the world's oil and gas resources, with an alliance with NATO.
And they're playing on people's sympathy. They know that if they say it's a humanitarian intervention, that the people who want to believe the best are going
to
support
it. That's right. Of course. Ed, if you'd like to join our conversation, it's 203-336-9756. It's In Context on WPKN 89.5 FM. And 203-336-9756. My name is Ken McDermott Rowe, and I'm here with Gus Candavero.
I want to ask you a couple of things. Did you see the Ann Coulter report and interview on Bill O'Reilly where she was penned a piece called A Glowing Report on Radiation?
No.
Did you see that one?
A Glowing Report on Radiation.
Yeah. This one and the article by George Monbiot called Going Critical. Did you read that one as well?
No.
All right. Yeah, these blew my mind. The lead sentence in Ann Coulter's article is, with the terrible earthquake and resulting tsunami that have devastated Japan, the only good news is that anyone exposed to excess radiation from the nuclear power plant is now probably much less likely to get cancer. You heard me correctly.
So we should all rest assured.
She basically says that radiation is nutritious. You know, and I know it's been put out there that people are offering to give her a all expenses paid vacation to Fukushima because it's for her health. You know.
Well, this seems ludicrous, and this horrible tragedy for the Japanese seems to raise two distinct problems. One is that we have power plants that are located in fault zones,
yeah.
And the second, we have an enormous amount of spent nuclear fuel that we don't know what to do with.
Right.
There's an excellent newspaper, Rock Creek Free Press, we've cited before, a monthly, coming out of Washington, and in a recent article by Harvey Wasserman, he points out that in California they have plants at near San Diego and near between L.A. and San Francisco. One's at San Onofre, I hope I pronounced that right, and the other one is Diablo Canyon, and they both are standing on the edge of faults, and neither of them are designed to withstand powerful earthquakes such as the one in Japan.
What's the logic in that? How can you do that?
It's really crazy. They're also vulnerable to tsunamis, according to Mr. Wasserman, because they're in a low-lying area. So a disaster there could just devastate a heavily populated state like California.
It's like building paper houses in a place where you get forest fires regularly.
And then, meanwhile, we have all of this nuclear fuel rods that we don't know what to do with. According to, this is an article from the New York Times of March 23rd, we have 72,000 tons of spent fuel from civilian sites, plus more from military sites, and we don't know what the heck to do with them. The idea was to put them in Yucca Mountain, Nevada, and they discovered that that wasn't as secure a place as they thought it was. So that
I know the French recycle them. Because when they've gone through the the generators, they come out, they still have something like 98% of their power.
Right. So
I don't know why.
Very dangerous.
But the I know the French recycle them and they run them through more times. They do something to repackage them.
But they must have stuff at the end.
Like, yeah, I mean, they're still radioactive at the end. I don't know what you do with them. I mean, this whole thing about nuclear power, I've always been so susceptible.
It's really, I mean, those who build these plants really are not telling us the true story.
Well, you shouldn't worry because George Monbiot wrote in his article, Going Critical, the subtitle for that one is How the Fukushima Disaster Taught Me to Stop Worrying and Embrace Nuclear Power. And he says, as a result of the disaster at Fukushima, I am no longer nuclearist neutral. I now support the technology.
Who can plumb that kind of logic?
It's just you know what that is? That's a result of the nuclear power lobby.
And tremendously power. Even if the repository at Yucca Mountain were open, according to a former Energy Department official, it would take decades to move the current inventory into a repository. And by that time, we'd have a considerable amount sitting in pools of plants waiting to be disposed of. So there is no adequate way of doing this. And I was wondering, well, maybe there is, but nobody's discovered it. I thought, well, what do we do for nuclear power? And evidently, we've been subsidizing it heavily for the last 50 years. A lot of the proponents of nuclear power, I think, are these so-called free market Republicans. Mm-hmm. But in fact, nuclear power has been heavily supported by the government in a lot of not very obvious ways. They don't necessarily get cash handouts, but they get guaranteed financing. And unbelievably, even as this disaster is occurring, I learned, again, from the Rock Creek Free Press, an article by Gregory Palas, the famous investigative journalist, that the Obama administration asked Congress in last December to provide $4 billion in loan guarantees for two new nuclear reactors in Texas. Guess who's going to construct them? TEPCO, the company from Japan.
Yeah, and guess who the reactor turbines are built by?
Who are they built by?
GE.
GE, okay. And so what the heck, what's going on here?
The former GE CEO is now the head of the Commerce Department, right?
Is that right?
Or is he the energy czar? Or he's either the head of the Commerce Department or the energy department.
So they've got a lot of clout, clearly.
Oh, yeah.
And the nuclear industry has tremendous.
And they pay no taxes.
So he's really going with the program of pushing nuclear energy. And Constellation Energy is planning on building some new plants in a consortium with other energy companies in Maryland. And they acknowledge that the federal subsidies were worth several hundred million dollars for each year for each reactor that they were building.
Uh-huh.
So these guys are getting huge subsidies. So I don't see why anybody in his right mind running this country would be putting huge subsidies into such a dangerous technology.
Yeah. Now, you do have to kind of – I mean, I'm not going to say that I'm 100% against nuclear power because we do need electricity. You know, we can't just say ban all of it because – I mean, I'm for the modern clean coal power plants. I think that the amount of scrubbers that they put on, the only thing that comes out at the top is carbon dioxide. None of the coal dust comes out anymore. But I don't think you can power an entire country on one form of power. You know, I think you're going to need a grouping of power generation. It's really upsetting to me how corrupt the power lobbies are.
That's right. And we've known this reality for almost 40 years since the OPEC embargo of the U.S. in the early 70s.
Yeah.
And why all these years later we're not energy self-sufficient through a variety of non-oil.
I don't know.
It's because of the corruption. It's because when you look at, and this is really what in context is about, is pointing out how every aspect of important public policy in this country is controlled by corporations for the short-term profit interests and not for the good of the American people or the long-term self-interest of our nation. If you look at
That's what it's about.
Because nobody in it is very few people in the corporate media are willing to say this because of the sponsorship and because of their ownership.
No, because they're all right. You have one network that's NBC that's owned by GE,
right?
And they're a subsidiary. And then you've got other stations that are in the pocket of other lobbies. You know,
right.
So you know Fox News is going to be in the pocket of the conservative lobby, and so they always push for coal power and they push for everything else and. Drilling for oil and all that sort of stuff. And it just seems that you're never going to get an honest assessment. You know, and I'm here to tell you that I support one, but only tepidly. You know, and I say that we should have some nuclear power, but it should be inland.
But it's something
Idaho, you know, not California.
And it's something we should, I think it's so important, we should have a referendum about it. It should be something that the American people decide, not a bunch of lobbyists who have access to our president. And it's not a left, right, or a liberal, conservative, or Democrat, Republican issue.
Do you want to live near a power plant?
Yeah.
Yes,
people, the American people should say, we don't want nuclear power. We shouldn't have it shoved down our throats by the nuclear power lobby in cahoots with our president.
how are we doing for time, Dave?
Okay, Doug. Well, maybe we could take one more call if there's someone out there who would like to join our conversation. We're at 203-336-9756. We've been talking about Japan and about the war in Libya. It's 203-336-9756. You're listening to In Context, WPKN's live call-in public affairs show. We're at 89.5 FM in Bridgeport, Connecticut.
Did you hear about the one thing that's been a major part of the story in Japan is the stoic mentality of the Japanese people.
Yes.
First of all, no looting, no disorderly conduct during the crisis of the tsunami. I mean, that says something about the people there.
Yeah,
because
they,
if that happened here, you'd have TVs running around the street. You know, people. It's just we are so decadent as a society, so corrupt. How about the Fukushima 50? I mean, they expect to die.
Yes.
These 50 guys who are working in shifts so that they can minimize their radiation exposure.
It's incredible heroism.
They expect to die, and they're continuing to work.
And I don't think it'll be a very nice death either. It's going to be.
Oh, it's horrible. It's horrible.
You know, these people are very courageous.
One of them stepped in radiated water, and he had to be treated on his leg for burns from radiation. You know. And then the mayor of the town, this headline here, this is from naturalnews.com. It says, Japanese mayor urges evacuation after discovering government misled on dangers. Now, first of all, I think the misleading on the radiation, I think, is a way to protect their national export interests. They know that people won't want to go there, won't want to buy their seafood, won't want to buy their exports if they honest on the radiation levels.
In fact, the New York Times of March 30th reported that the Metropolitan Opera is debating whether to go ahead with its scheduled tour of Japan in June.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a kind of isolation and disaster that they face.
One of the this mayor, you know, he said that he told his people that it was safe to stay there. It's a town of 71,000 people. And he's personally embarrassed that he was the one that relayed this news. And he's the mayor of the town Minamisoma. And he says he didn't tell his people to evacuate. He learned what had actually happened, that the information was being deliberately withheld from him, and he was outraged. City's just outside the government's recommended radius for evacuation, as we talked about before, though, that radius keeps on expanding. And his direct quote was, "Of course I am angry. I was ignored and then badly misled. As a result, the people were abandoned here to die. But I was the one who told them it was safe to stay, and now I have decided that I must be the last person to leave this city. I have been in my office since last Friday, and I won't go until the last person has left safely."
This is a brave man.
That's a man with leadership.
Yes.
Something that we don't have in this country.
We have one more call, Dave?
Ruth.
Yes.
Go ahead.
The Japanese are showing exemplary courage and discipline. I'm curious that first there was a call for sending in donations, and that sort of died down. The last tsunami, there was a huge wave of donations sent in for that area. I guess Japan doesn't need the money right now.
No, it's not the money they need. It's the goods, the water, bottles, food, medicine.
You also said that Japan is not in the news. The Times had like 3 full pages on what's happening in Japan. I just have one other comment. You know, there's so much going on that's horrendous.
Uh-huh.
And that we can't deal with, really. And so the negativity could just really turn. I mean, people are just having so many problems just getting by.
Right.
And the media is so negative, and we can't. What to focus on? Now, you went over Japan, you went over Libya and Ukraine and all these countries, and why didn't we help out in the Ivory Coast? Of course, we can't go all over, and we do go where any country goes where its interests. Why, right?
Well, I think the point we bring up with Libya is that why do we intervene there and not in Ivory Coast?
Because
you know, obviously
we don't
want to intervene in Libya either. You know, it's the precedent that's being set that we're trying to point out. It's hypocrisy.
Well, I think I'm probably not reading it right, but the rebels, you know, I sort of admire them, and I felt we should support them.
Uh-huh.
Gaddafi, you said, well, another strong man's going to come in power. No one's going to be like Gaddafi.
Can we be sure of
what that? What is the standard on which you intervene in people in the civil wars of other countries? Because they're going on all the time. How do you decide?
There's no one popping up every day.
Which ones to intervene in?
Well, I guess our oil interests are in Libya, and I remember Bob Grant. That's like 100 years ago, and he always said, "Get Gaddafi."
Uh-huh.
And if we did it maybe 40 years ago, I don't know. You can't get these strong people because we just can't get them.
I mean, we're friends with them one day, and you know, not then we're off again, on again. You know, it's almost like we have girlfriends around the world. You know, we court them and then we drop them, and we're back on with them again. You know, it just depends on whether they will play ball with us or not. You know, it has nothing to do with how they treat their people, because if it was that, then we would have overthrown Saudi Arabia years ago.
Ruth, what would you think if Obama decides to commit U.S. ground forces to the civil war in Libya? Would you support that?
No, I don't think he won't do it. I don't think he'll do it.
That's confident.
I don't know. Evidently, 3 weeks ago, this is from the New York Times.
I said Camp Lejeune has already sent 2,200
March 30th. Evidently, he authorized weeks ago, it said, a secret finding he signed, authorizing the CIA to provide arms and other support to the Libyan rebels. So goodness knows, you know, what we have there secretly in terms of, I don't know, special forces or green berets on the ground.
Yeah,
but it's evident that it appears from what our own General Ham says is that the rebels are not likely to win without a significant amount of U.S.
Mm-hmm.
NATO support.
Mm-hmm.
And this is costing $100 million a day, and it could go on for years.
So I don't know what he's going to do, because I think it looked at first as if Gaddafi might just fold up and leave, but now it seems like he's getting pretty strong. So I would be curious to see what Obama does in the next couple of weeks, because I don't think he wants this thing to hang around for a long time.
I hear you. Okay, take care.
Thanks for calling, Ruth.
Thanks for the call.
And thank you all, listeners, for calling and for being with us tonight. You've been listening to In Context, WPKN's live call-in public affairs show. This is Ken McDermott Rowe. I'm here with Gus Candavero, and we'd like you to tune into our next program, which is going to be this coming Wednesday at 6:30 p.m. We're on the first Sunday at 10 and the first Wednesday at 6:30 p.m. And this Wednesday at 6:30, we're going to have Professor Andrew Hacker, who's the author of How Colleges Are Wasting Our Money and Failing Our Kids. And we're going to talk about the incredible increase in college tuition and what might be done about it. And just one number, that if you want to go to the UConn, the University of Connecticut, a 4-year degree as an out-of-state student costs you now, I just checked,
and $68,000. That's for one youngster to go to UConn for 4 years, and it's a little over $100,000 if you're lucky enough to get in admitted as an in-state student. So we're going to talk about how these tuitions got to be so crazy and what can be done about it. That's this Wednesday, April 6th at 6:30.
It's pretty entertaining read, too, by the way, that book. I've been nose deep in it for the past week.
So that's all for us. Thanks a lot for listening. Are we okay, Dave?
Okay.
Good night, everybody. Thanks.
Good night.
WEAM New York.
The four insurgent generals, the four insurgent generals.